Okay, why don't we get going again? Great. Okay. Wave of excitement sweeps through the room. So what are we going to do next is study a little bit about cash organization. So exactly how are these caches organized? How do they work at a little bit more detailed level? We have a very high-level model how they work at this point. Let's get a little bit more further into it. So again, we're going to start with this notion of a cache block. Let's say a cache block is 32 bytes. And then, of course, a cache has some number of entries, which tells you something about how big the cache is. There are a lot of different sizes of cache. For the purposes of our examples, we're going to pretend we have very small caches. Caches are generally much bigger than this. So a typical size of like a first-level cache that's on the CPU and very much trying to keep your performance high might be something like 1,000 entries or something like that for what I'll call a level one cache. We'll see why they're called that in a second. But for now, we're just going to have a pretend small cache because it's hard to draw something with 1,000 entries. So we're going to have a pretend small cache that only has, let's say, 4 entries. Okay? Obviously, the bigger the cache, you know, that'd be great if we have really big caches, but if we make them too big, then they can't be at the speed that we want to run in, like we talked about already. So now what we have is the problem where what we want to do is, given an address, we need to be able to determine whether something is a hit or a miss. In other words, is it in the cache, or is it not? Is the address that we're interested in not in the cache? Okay? And the hardware has to be able to do that. It has to be able to do that in a really simple and fast way. Hardware in general is about simplicity, right? You can't do really complicated, fancy algorithms in hardware because then they can't build it and make it run fast. That's a gross oversimplification of hardware design, but there's some underlying truth in it, so you'll forgive me. But we're going to try to come up with something that's kind of simple. So to understand that better, let's look a little bit more at the addresses and make sense of them. So let's say we have main memory here. And let's, again, just for the sake of the example, let's pretend we have a really small main memory, okay? We don't want to have, like, this super large example of, like, gigabytes of memory because that's, again, it would take me a long time to draw that, especially cache block at a time. So let's pick a small size. I already said that the cache block size is 32 bytes. So then let's say that memory is, let's say we have just 8 blocks, 8 cache blocks. So 256 byte memory. This is obviously a ridiculously small memory. Memories are huge and filled with lots and lots of data, but we're going to just pretend our main memory is 256 bytes, okay, for the sake of this example. So if our memory is 256 bytes, that means an address, well, we can figure out how many bits are in an address. How many bits are in an address if we have a 256 byte memory and we have to be able to refer to each byte? Anyone have a guess? Well, a good kind of good rules of thumb are if you have a 1 kilobyte or 1,024 bytes, you need 10 bits. So if you need, that means if you need 512 bytes, you need 9 bits. It means if you need 256, you need 8 bits. Of course, you could figure that out just by doubling, you know, figure out what 2 to the 8th is. So we have an 8-bit address. And unfortunately here, we have to be a little bit comfortable with bits and bytes again. So we have to come back into the world where number of bits and things matters to us because we're going to see how cache hardware explicitly looks at some bits and doesn't look at other bits in order to figure out things like, is this a hit or is this a miss? So if you're not comfortable with that, you kind of have to get comfortable with it. So let's say we have our 8 bits here. And of course, those can be anything from 0, 0, you know, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. That would refer to the first byte of memory. And then I said here we have these 32-byte cache blocks. So you can think of our 256-byte memory as really being kind of like 8 different cache blocks worth of memory, right? In fact, we could kind of number those. This is like cache block 0, cache block 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So what we have to understand, if we're going to understand caches, is we have to understand that in this address itself, there's actually two components to this address. We think of an address then as part one is like which cache block are we referring to? That's the first part of the address. And the second part is which byte in this block are we interested in? If that makes sense. So as we can see from this diagram, we have 8 different cache blocks. So how many bits do we need to refer to those 8 different cache blocks? Well, we need to be able to refer to 0, and we need to be able to refer up to 7. How do we represent 7 in binary? Well, it's 1, 1, 1, right? It's 1, 1, 1 and 1, 2, and 1, 4. So we need 3 bits to be able to refer to all these different cache blocks. So the top 3 bits here are going to be telling us which, we can think of this as which, you know, block in memory that we're referring to. And then the bottom, you can see the bottom 5 bits here, not surprisingly 5, because we know we have a 32-byte block. That's our cache block. So we need to be able to refer to 2 to the 5th different things. 32 is 2 to the 5th, so we need 5 bits to tell you which byte you're interested in within that block. So we're going to try to divide our addresses into, hey, which block is it, and then which byte within that block. And it's really important to understand that. And I've, in many computer parts of computer systems, this comes up in operating systems too at a different level, you have to have this kind of understanding of how to look at a memory and chop it into blocks of some size and then understand how to address those blocks and think of those addresses having a couple different pieces. Like I said, the top bits being which cache block we're interested in, and then the bottom bits being which byte we're interested in. So let's do an example. For example, if we have address, well, I don't know, pick an address. We have an address that can be anywhere from 0 to, what's our highest address? 255, right? So what is, let's just do the extremes first. What's 255? The address 255 is in binary 111 and then 11111. And you can see that's true, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128. So you know when you have all the ones up to, say, some number, it's twice that number minus 1 is the total. So that's how you represent 255 in binary. And then, of course, if we look at this part, like I said, if we say, well, what do these first 3 bits represent? Well, that's 1, 2, 4, so that's 7. And like I said, that tells us, yes, this address refers to anything in that 7th or, you know, what's really the 8th or labeled 7 cache block. What these 5 bits tell you, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, is this is 31. And so this is 0 up to the 31 index byte. So that tells us it's the last byte within there. So in fact, if we have any byte that we're referring to on this last cache block, we know that these 3 bits are all going to be 1. And then what only thing that varies is these bits from 0, 0, 0, 0, 0 up to 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Does that make sense? It's one of these two things. It's really obvious, or it's like it makes no sense. This is what I've observed in many years of teaching this type of stuff. So if you have a question about it, it's good to ask now, because all we're going to do is kind of deal with these bits for the next part of this class. So any questions about that? Yeah. Yeah, so let me try to understand your question. So let me just kind of say something more general and maybe it'll answer your question. From our programmer's perspective, all we deal with is our addresses, right? We just have an address. And here our address is, anything from 0 to 255. That's a legal address for this in this little pretend world. I mean, of course, in a real program, we have a big 32-bit address space or a 64-bit address space, so we can generate much larger addresses. Here, we can just generate these tiny addresses. So to us, that's all we would ever say. Like, we'd say move 255 or, move byte 255 into, percent, like AL, one of these one-byte registers. But what the hardware is going to want to do is that when you do that, like, access a byte or 4 bytes, like an integer on that, in that part of memory, it's going to want to figure out, well, which cache block are you referring to? Because I'm going to move that whole block. So the way it's going to figure that out is it doesn't need to look at all these parts down here, because when these change, it's just changing which byte we're interested in. But we're only going to move this whole entire cache block. So this part alone is kind of enough for us. It tells us which block of memory are we going to move. And we know the size of the block, so we can kind of compute the same thing. So we're just going to, and then what we're going to see in a minute is understanding this, what we'll call this part of the address, the which byte within the block, we're going to call it the offset. And we're going to see why we need to look at that in a second when we access the cache. So it's important to understand that, and it's good to ask questions. But why don't I just move forward, and if you have more questions about it, you can just keep asking, which would be totally fine. Okay. So we have to continue our example over here. Again, we had our main memory, and it had, 256 bytes, which we can refer to in our program, but literally that's just laid onto 8 different cache blocks. Each cache block, or just block, is 32 bytes. So then when we do something like, but then over here we have our cache, and we have to start figuring out how to keep stuff in our cache and know what's in our cache. So what we are going to do here is our cache, let's just make it simpler. Let's make it 2 entries, actually. So what does an entry look like in our cache? Well, clearly an entry has to have room for the data, which is the block. So most of the cache is, say, 32 bytes here is a single entry. This is a single entry. And if we think of our whole cache, which is our example 2-entry cache, that, of course, is going to look something like this. It's going to have 2 entries like this. And again, this is the size of a block. But remember what the CPU has to do. The CPU has to be able to examine the cache and figure out, is this a hit or a miss? Right, it has to be able to look, and it needs more information than just the data, because putting the data there doesn't tell you anything. That's just some data. Those are just some bits that you got from memory. We need to have something about the address, right? Because that's how we do a lookup on the memory system. So we need something that relates to the address over here for each of these entries. Now, what I was trying to build towards, hopefully this makes sense, is we clearly could just put like the entire address of the block there. We could put the entire address there, right? We could say, when we brought in something, we could say, well, how many different blocks do we have? Well, we know that this is block 0, and this is 1, and this is 2, 3, 4, 5, Okay, so generally we can kind of look at it as like what you can think of as a block address. And you can see right away that it wouldn't make sense to put like a byte address in there, because we're putting 32 bytes of memory in there. We're not putting any 1 byte in there. So we can't just put a full address. We need to say which block is of that we've maybe, let's say we read something from this page, sorry, this block right here. Let's say we've read that into the cache. And if we've read this one in here, what we're going to put over here, let's say, is, say, 011. And what we're going to, there's a special name for this in the world of caching, the part of the address that we look at to see if something is in the cache. And we're going to call that a tag. And this is just something you're going to, if you ever talk about caches in any way, you're going to be talking about tags. Okay, and then we might, for example, let's say we access another byte or a few bytes, let's say, of some memory over on this part of memory, then we're going to bring this block of memory into here. Let's kind of label this way, put this here, and then we will go ahead and put this tag inside of there too. So in other words, what's happening here, if we think about it a little bit more mechanically, is your instruction presents an address to the memory system, which now includes our cache. Now remember, that address might be something like, remember, we might be like, oh, add 100 to EAX and then store that in, you know, get that memory value and put it in EBX. So the CPU first adds 100 to the contents of EAX. That's our address. Then it goes to the memory. It presents the memory system that address, right? It computes that address first, and then it's going to try to look that up. But what we're going to do with that address is extract part of it first, which we'll call the tag, which we can see how many tag bits we need by looking at this in this kind of general case here, and then use the tag to determine hit or miss. Okay, does that make sense? So you look at the cache, you take some bits out of the address, you say, hey, and let's say the hardware looks at all of these in parallel and says, is it in there anywhere? Do these bits in our address that we're interested in match some of the bits that are in there already? If they do, that's a hit. Then we're going to grab the data from that cache block that's in the cache. If not, we're going to go to memory and go get that thing and bring it back into the cache. So that leaves a question, which is, once we have a cache hit, you know, in the case of a hit, let's say we had our, you know, move and then some address, you know, how do you figure out which bytes to get out of this cache block? And that's what this second part of the address is for, which we call the offset. Remember, the offset, because we have a 32-byte cache block, is any number from 0 to 31. It's just telling us which bytes we're interested in, and it's going to tell us the same exact thing inside of that cache block that we have in our cache. It's just telling us, oh, we're interested in the, you know, 0 byte. All zeros are going to be there. Or we're interested in byte 1, or we're interested in byte 31, or whatever in between. So you can think of, the address as being a tag and an offset. In kind of the simple case that we're doing right now, the tag tells us which block we're interested in and whether, say, that block is in the cache. And then the offset tells us which byte or set of bytes are within that block that we're interested in getting. Questions about that? Does that kind of make sense? I mean, the cache at a high level hopefully makes sense. And then this is just getting a little bit into some details, which we're going to, unfortunately, it's going to get worse in a second. So it's good to ask questions now. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a very good question. The question is, let's just do it on another page so we can actually do it a little bit more carefully. So let's say we had, again, let's have our tiny memory, 256 bytes. And that means the first cache block is, you know, 32 bytes, right? And let's say we did something like this, move from move L of 30 into EAX. So what's already weird about that? If you didn't hear the question, if you did, then you probably know. What's weird about the getting 4 bytes from 30 and putting it into EAX? Yeah, it's across 2 blocks, right? Because the last byte here on this block is 31, tiny 31. Here's 30, and then so 30, 31, 32, 33. It's in a separate cache block. This is what we call the dreaded unaligned access. And we always use that voice when we refer to unaligned accesses or to unaligned accesses. So that's why that performs really terribly. And that's why people care about alignment, right? When we were talking about malloc, we were caring about alignment, but you weren't really caring about alignment. I could see your heart wasn't in it. You're just like, the assignment says I have to align things, so I will align them, and then I will get some credit for aligning things. And then I did some math. I don't know why I did it, but the project said to do it, so I'm doing it. That was our understanding of alignment. Now we look at this instruction in horror, and we know why it's so terrible to give memory systems unaligned accesses, because what happens when you do that, of course, is you have to, the hardware has to fetch 2 cache blocks in instead of 1 to do this work. So it means it's going to be half as efficient. Yeah. Why allow it? That's such a great question. In fact, that's the exact same question when people in the 80s came up with these simpler architectures called these RISC or reduced instruction set architectures. They're like, that's so dumb. We shouldn't even allow the hardware to do it. The hardware is simpler then, and we won't let it do it. Everything that you generate has to be aligned. Otherwise, the CPU will like generate an exception and say, that's an illegal memory access. x86 allows it because x86 was trying to be friendly to you, the assembly programmer. So whether that was a good idea or not, that's a great question. But you can see how it's fundamentally inefficient. Now, your question is kind of more of a philosophical one. Why do computer systems allow you to do all these horrible things in general? It's because it's actually very hard to prevent you from doing all these terrible things. This is one case where we maybe could prevent you and make the program just die when you try to do it. But there's so many things you can do that are bad for performance that it's almost generally impossible to design a system that doesn't let you kind of do things horribly. That's a sad reality of the world. Right, like when you use a file system, I don't know if you've ever like created like you put like in a typical file system, you might put like 100 files in a directory and it works fine. If you then put like 1 billion files in the directory, even like you have a very large hard drive or SSD, it should work, but it starts to work a lot more slowly because the data structures of the file system aren't anticipating that you're going to have 1 billion files in there. Now, why does it let you do that? Well, you know, it lets you do it because it thinks maybe you know have some reason to do it, but it's going to just do it more slowly. So performance as a failure is kind of an interesting thing and kind of an ongoing, almost like a research topic, actually. But x86 allows kind of everything, so you can do this, and it's very inefficient. Good question. Other questions about that? Okay. So we have a little bit of a issue now, so let's go back to what we were talking about. I forget which page number this is. 12. So we have a couple problems. We are with our cache right now. So far, let's say we have a 4-entry cache. Just in this slightly different example, so we can think of that as there are 4, you know, blocks. Here are the blocks. And then associated with each of those blocks, there are these tags, which tell us essentially which block is cached here. But there's a couple problems we haven't addressed. Problem one, is what happens when the system first starts executing. That's the first problem. We'll get to the second problem in a second. Like we have, the system starts up, when your program starts running. Well, what's in the cache? There's some bits in there right now. So if we're not careful, like let's say we set it all to zeros, like just zero out. Like usually when you're like, I'm initializing something, you just set it all to zeros. Usually that's a good gut behavior, right? Gut instinct. I want to initialize it. Set it all to zeros. Usually works. So here, let's say we set all these things to zeros. Why doesn't that seem quite as good? Well, it's great until you access cache block zero, because cache block zero now is somehow represented in all these places, which is already weird. We shouldn't have copies of the data in the cache. And actually, cache block zero is some part of memory that doesn't necessarily have all zeros inside of it. So we need some way to actually determine if there's anything that's valid inside the cache when we start going, or maybe when we later, when we'll see when we switch between things. So to deal with this problem, we're going to add another bit, and it's going to vary just one bit. It's going to be called the valid bit, and it's going to tell us whether there's a valid entry or not. Valid bit, one per entry. And you can imagine at startup, it's all zero. And then as you first load things into the cache, you can then set the tag correctly and then set the valid bit to one. So in other words, the tags will not be looked at unless the particular corresponding valid bit is set to one. So almost any time you have a cache, you have to have some way of determining, like, if you're going to look up something in the cache, whether the thing that you're looking up is actually valid or not. And this is a pretty common way to do it. Questions about the valid bit. Okay, not a super exciting bit. Let's talk a little bit more about something that's a little more interesting, which is what happens, so this is question two perhaps, what happens when the cache fills up? So let's say we had our four-entry cache, and we had some tags in it, like 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 0. Let's say the other one was 1, 0, 1. It doesn't have to be in any order. These are our tags. So this is telling us which cache blocks. And then we have an access to block, cache block 1, 1, 1, or 7. You can see by looking at the tags here that this is a miss. So now we have a problem. What's our problem? Well, admit we already had the miss, so what's the problem? Yeah. Yeah, right. We could declare the cache is full. It's like, sorry, every other block, you're out of luck. There was a race to get in. It's like a popular concert that everybody else is left out. That could be, you could design a cache like that. Like, it's called like the first N entries, the first N things you access. Those are what we're going to keep in the cache. That's probably not a good strategy, because if your program might start up and do some stuff, and then of course it might change and access some completely different things repeatedly, and those first things you left in there, not so great. So what we need to do when we have a miss, and in this case the cache is full, what we need to do is we need to do something called evict, or sometimes people call replace an existing, that's a weird E, existing entry. So sometimes we will call this an eviction policy or a replacement policy. Now, in computer systems, there are all sorts of places for these little policies, or what you might call little algorithms, that decide something. And they're all heuristics. And there are 1,000 different papers about different heuristics that work well for different kinds of applications or workloads or whatever. And whenever there's 1,000 answers to something, that means there's no one great answer. Like, how do you decide this? Because what do you really have to know to decide which block to evict? Which will be used in the future, right? You have to know ahead of time, like, oh, if I knew that I'm about to access these blocks, like, for example, if I know that the access after this, after access to block 7 was to, say, block 0, then it would be fine. I could, you know, I would make sure to keep that one around, because, you know, it's the one I need next. In fact, an optimal policy will evict the block that's going to be accessed furthest in the future. That's actually something you can prove is optimal. So if I knew, like, this was going to be accessed soon, and then this one pretty soon after that, and then maybe this one, and then in the distant future, this one, if this was the furthest away in the future, then my goal would be to evict it. Unfortunately, I don't know the future, generally. That's not always true, by the way. There are cases where, like, like you're building an embedded system or some sort of very specific computer system and you're running a very specific application on it. And in those cases, you may know a lot about what's going on and you may be able to build a very specific policy or algorithm to do this. But in the general case, which is, you know, when Intel sells a hardware chip, this is logic that's embedded in the hardware. So they're selling to data centers, they're selling to your laptop, they're selling to, you know, I don't know, you know, 98% or whatever, what's their latest advertising. Intel's everywhere. It's driving the economy. It's terrific. So Intel is in like so many different places. That means it's a general purpose computing chip, and it's very hard to build a general purpose algorithm that does well in very specific cases. So we have to come up with some sort of policy. It's a heuristic, and it has to be something that's kind of simple to build. So let's think about some possible eviction policies. And this is something you talk about in hardware class when you talk about caches. You talk about it in operating systems class because operating systems have to manage what's in memory at a given time. We'll talk about that a little bit in the future. So it comes up almost any time you're managing a cache, you have to have some sort of eviction policy or replacement policy. I'll write both of those things. So what are some possibilities? Well, yeah. Oh, like a kind of like a distance thing or something. If I'm accessing something here, then maybe I should find something that's far away from here because I'm maybe have like no locality that they're. Yeah, that's a reasonable policy. I could see that. So. Kick away the furthest away in the address space, sure, in address, distance. You know, I've talked about policies like this in classes for 17 years. I don't think anyone's ever suggested that, so that's kind of cool. What else? Yeah, right. It's another common thing is to kind of look at timing. In other words, you can think of there being some sort of timestamp for every entry, and then what you do is you kick out the block that was least recently accessed, or what we usually call least recently used, or what people will call an LRU replacement policy. So you can imagine there's three cache blocks I'm accessing a lot, and then there was the fourth one that I brought into the cache a long time ago, but I haven't been accessing it very recently. So when I go to evict one, why not evict the one that I haven't accessed very recently? And the idea there, again, is the past predicts the future, right? So we have kind of two interesting past predicts the future. Here we're saying, like, in space, like in address space, that maybe the past predicts the future, or the current access is telling us we're not going to access something that's far away, so kick that out. Here we say time is a good one. Sometimes people they kick out the least frequently used. Some people call that LFU. That's just, you can imagine you keep a count for each entry, and as it gets used more, it's more likely to stay in the cache. And of course, because hardware needs to be fast and efficient, sometimes these are too expensive, so they do some kind of pseudo-random policy eviction. Just pick one. Doesn't matter which. Pseudo-random tends to be actually is not a terrible policy. It's very robust in a lot of cases to weird cases. So like for example, let's look at LRU. Let's say we have a 4-entry cache. And then let's say we have a loop. And in that loop, we end up accessing, access 5 different blocks of memory, and then we repeat. When we have a 4-entry cache and we access 5 blocks over and over again, and we have a least recently used replacement, what's our hit rate going to be? How often are we going to hit in the cache? Yeah, not very often. Like if we, let's do a simpler case. If we have four entry cache and we're just accessing four things over and over again, like in a loop, that's really good because they all fit in the cache. When we're accessing more than fits in the cache and then we're kicking out the oldest one, well, if we're accessing like, you know, block zero, block one, block two, block three, block four, and then we come back and act block zero, well, when we brought block four in, block zero had already just gotten kicked out. So like a policy like LRU can have these very bad behaviors in certain cases, and that's why people sometimes like random policies. Now, you could actually spend a lot of time talking about policy. I don't tend to like it. I tend to like the mechanisms of how stuff works. And the policies are just kind of these arbitrary things. You just need one. So we'll just know that they exist in these types of caches that we've been talking about. Okay. Any questions about that? Okay. So we have some sense. We're reading stuff into the cache. It fills up. Then when it fills up, we have to kick things out. We have to have a policy of some kind that does that. What policy is, who knows? Maybe it's random. Maybe it's something like LRU. But that's generally how our cache works. But we do have a problem. And the problem when you build a cache like this, with the cache that we have so far, is that it's actually hard to build this the way we built it efficiently. And the reason is that the typical cache, why is that? Well, the caches have thousands of entries. Or more. Some of them have many, many thousands of entries. I was going to try to draw that, and then I decided that's a bad idea. So caches are big. They have lots of entries. If they have lots of entries, that means if they have thousands of entries, that means they have thousands of tags. And then when you do a cache lookup in the hardware, it has to look through all the tags to see if it's a hit or a miss, right? Because it could be in any of those entries, right? We kicked one out, we brought something in, we kicked another one out, we brought something in. So any of these entries in hardware could have this thing. Now, you know, in a program, you can imagine how you would write something like that. You would say like, well, you know, for I equals zero to number of cache entries, you know, check if it's in this entry, check if it's in that entry. Hardware has to be faster than that. And so that lookup actually is going to happen in parallel. All of the entries are going to be checked at the same time. And then one result, like a hit or miss, is going to come out of that parallel checking. It's hard. We can't appreciate that in this class because we're not building hardware in here. But that's hard to do, and it's hard to make work for very large caches. So the next challenge we're going to face is how to build a cache that basically doesn't have to check all the tags at once. Because that type of cache will be faster, at least in current technology. So with that question in our mind, let's take the delightful break number two, always refreshingly early, and then we will come back. We'll do a little administrative stuff, and then let the break begin. Hey, what's up? Yeah, great question. So we'll talk about that. Short answer is it depends on how the cache is built. So some caches, what you'll do is when you read something in, like when you write it, you'll bring it into cache, and then you'll modify it in cache for a while, and then later you will, when you kick it out, you'll write it back to main memory. And then some, what they'll do is they basically always, when they write to the memory cache value, they also force it through to the main memory. And that's just the different design points. But there's nothing like the first form, where you kind of write to the cache for a while and then later flush it back to memory. That's not like incorrect. It just means that if you did happen to read main memory somehow around the cache, like you would see the old value. But generally, you wouldn't do that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so on a single processor system, it's never a problem because the cache is like the thing that sits in front of the memory. Where all these things become much more complicated is when you have multiple processors, one shared memory, and each processor has a cache. So I modify something in my cache, then when you go to read it, you might get the old value if you're not careful. So then you need to have, there's like this whole body of literature on how do you build what's called a cache coherence protocol, which is like, so when I do a read over here, that it knows, oh, like it asks the other caches, do you have this? Instead of going to main memory, and then it might get it from that cache, and it becomes very complicated. Unfortunately, we don't have the time to really get into that. But yeah, that whole machines do, and machines then take shortcuts for performance reasons. So there are cases where you will get strange behavior because they're like, well, if you're doing that, you should know that you might get like an old value, because it's, and there's many reasons for that, but it's almost always like some performance trade-off. Yeah. So yeah. You don't like the 3-hour power lecture? I really prefer once a week. It would be. It's hard to do 3 hours. It's actually hard to do. Students prefer like 3 50 minutes instead of 2 hour 15s. So you're getting one worse than that. You should go walk around. Okay, run around. Like, if the walk isn't enough, run. If the run isn't enough, sprint. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I hated lectures. So, humorously, I like giving lectures, but I never like listening to them. So, it's hard to listen to somebody speak for a long time, right? Ugh. Okay, why don't we get going again? By the way, you should totally tell me when I've kept the mic on and I'm in break and all my stupid break commentary is being broadcast. All right, so what we'll do is we'll do one more stretch of material on caching. Then we'll take one more break, and then at that break I'll do some administrative stuff, and then I'll spend the last little bit of class talking about the next homework, homework 5, and then I'll end with the promised mystery code. And so we will do that at the very end. But before we get into that fun stuff, like your next, people tend to be interested in things like a homework assignment. We'll do that, like I said, last. But before we do that, we'll do a little bit more on caching because we have to cover a bit of ground we can't do justice, right? This is something you spend many weeks on. You can study cache design. People spend their careers, dissertations, working on things like how caches should be built. Not so much anymore, but they used to. So you can spend a long time studying caches. We're just going to do it all in one day, and that's what we're going to get. Like I said, the kind of last part of the class is really either super exciting because you like systems a lot and all these things are just these brief windows into much bigger fields, which you find very interesting, or you'll feel like we're not covering anything in enough depth, so it feels a little bit, unfortunately, shallow, but we're just going to try to balance those by going as far as we can. So the problem we had before is we were building something which we call actually a fully associative cache. And we'll see why it's called that in a second. But what that means is that a block from memory can go anywhere in the cache. So fully associative means we have a full choice, we have a full range of options. When we're putting into the cache, we can kick out any entry and put the new entry in. That's fully associative. But like we said, we think this is kind of slow and complex from a hardware standpoint. And that's just, I'm going to assert that that's true. I'm not going to prove it to you by showing you a bunch of transistor diagrams. So what we're going to go first now is to the other extreme. The other extreme is one where we have much less choice, but it's much faster. And that's something called a direct mapped cache. And why it's called direct map is because a particular block, based on its address, can only go into one particular slot of the cache. Okay, and you can hopefully intuitively appreciate why that's simpler, right? That's going to be simpler because to build in hardware, because we, instead of thinking about, oh, where is this thing in the cache, it can only be in this one slot based on some bits of the address, and we'll see which bits in a second. Okay, so that's a direct map cache. It's much simpler to build. It tends to be faster, but it's more restrictive. So let's look at an example. So we have an address of some kind here. And we know that the address has some block offset already. The bits which tell us which byte of the block that we're interested in, that's going to remain the same. And before, we were using the rest of these bits to tell us, you know, is this thing in the cache or not? Now what we're going to do is we're going to use some of these bits, of the upper bits, to determine which slot of the cache that we're going to place this particular block in. Okay? So let's say we have an address. Let's say we have a cache here with 4 entries. Well, we're going to call this, essentially, this is entry 00, this is entry 01, this is entry 10, and this is entry 11. And now what we have to do is we have to use some bits of this, what we were calling the tag before, to basically pick which slot we're going to use. So our choice there is kind of simple. It's we can either use these lower bits, perhaps, or maybe we use, say, the higher so many bits. In this case, we need just 2 bits. So let's get a real address so this can make more sense to us. Let's say our address has Well, let's say it has 5 bits for our offset. So here's our offset, and it's a 30, it has 5 bits down here, which means it's a, again, a 32-byte block. And let's say, just for sake of argument here, let's say we have another 5 bits up here. That's the rest of our address. So our address is 10 total bits, which means we can refer to 2 to the 10th bytes or 1,024 different bytes. So now we'd have a little bit bigger memory than we've been looking at, but still it's a tiny memory, 1 kilobyte. Even the first computer I used had more than 1 kilobyte of memory. How much memory did it have? It had 16 kilobytes. So it wasn't that much bigger. But amazingly, I found that interesting and spent my days typing basic programs into it. So later on, I met some friend of mine who had become a lawyer. And this guy, when he was in fourth grade, sorry for this bizarre aside, but even in fourth grade, like, he was the most persuasive and kind of like, you know, guy that would lie to people all the time. And I knew at that point he was going to be a lawyer. And sure enough, he became a lawyer, and a pretty good lawyer, actually. And then, so we were talking about that. I'm like, oh, I always knew you were going to be a lawyer friend of mine after I saw him like 20 years later. And then he said to me, and I was hoping he was going to say, oh, I always knew you'd be a professor because you were, you know, so scholarly and you explained things so clearly. And he said, I always knew you'd do some stupid thing with computers. So, so I wasn't quite as flattered, but it was, I guess, predictable. In any case, so how true. So let's say we have a little 1,024-byte memory, and therefore we know, we just have to know things like this, that means we have a 10-bit address. And that means we have 5 more bits outside of this offset that we can use to determine which entry of the cache we're going to use, or in other words, put into, and what we're going to, I'm just going to assert this, is I'm going to use the low order bits here. I'm going to use, say, these 2 bits in order to determine which entry. Okay, so that's going to determine which entry we're going to put this cache into. So this can clearly be 00, for example, and that means it would go into this entry if it were 01 and 10 and 11, etc. And then we'll have 3 more bits up here which don't do anything. So what is that? So that's a direct map cache. It literally means use some of those bits to determine which entry you go into, and then the rest of the bits we're going to use to figure out is this the actual block we're referring to. So I'm going to do that in slightly more detail on the next slide, so don't worry if you're screaming at me for taking away that thing. So we have our 4-entry cache. We have our address, which has 10 bits in it. We have our 32-byte block size, which again means that the bottom 5 bits is our what we would call our block offset. And then now we're dividing the upper bits into this part we're going to call the cache index. So this tells us which slot of the cache to put the block into. And then the remaining bits, well, what are we going to call that? What do we need those remaining bits for? Well, remember before when we had our block offset, we would just take the rest of the bits and we called it the tag, right? So we have tags over here. And yes, we still have our valid bits. So we still have that. And the question is, how big does this tag need to be? Do we need all 5 bits like we were using before? Do we need those upper 5 bits? You say no. Why? I think you said what I was thinking you were going to say. So this, remember, this index tells us exactly which entry we're going to be in. So it's either this is a 00 entry, 01, 10, or 11, which means that what we really need to uniquely identify a block is we already know these bits. So what we need is we just need the rest of the bits to identify that block. So that's called, that's the tag is what's left over that's not the index from the upper part. So here we would only need, in this example, we'd need 3 bits. So let's take a specific address. Let's do an example. Let's say we have 000, 00, and then let's go 11111. So this is 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, which means this is decimal address is 31 decimal. So let's say we access just 1 byte instead of accessing 4 bytes. So we're accessing 1 byte from move byte from address 31 into register, let's say AL, right? So that's just a byte move. What that would do is it would look at this address, the hardware would look at that address, which is in this binary form. It would then basically first ignore this part because it doesn't need that to figure out something about the cache. It would then look at these 2 bits and it would say, okay, this tells us I only need to look at this tag because that's the 00th entry. And then it would ask, what are the remaining 3 bits? Is that if the tag here is 000, then we know that we have a cache hit. If the tag isn't, then we would have a cache miss. And of course, there's plenty of addresses that could be found in that specific, you know, that specific spot. You know, anything where the top, sorry, the middle, these 2 bits here are 0, will lead to an address that is a block that could be in that 00th entry of the cache. So hopefully this makes sense intuitively of why this is faster, because we only have to look in one place in the cache. That's what makes direct map caches fast. Now, here's the hard question, or maybe the medium question, maybe not hard. Why did I pick these 2 bits as the ones I'm going to use to identify which entry, as opposed to, say, like these top 2 bits? So that's an important enough question that I'm going to let you think about it for, say, 2 minutes. Feel free to talk to people around you. Why am I picking those 2 bits as the cache index and not, say, the top 2 bits? So why don't you just think about that and discuss it with somebody and convince yourself of some kind of answer, however unsure you are, and then see if you can come up with a good reason. What's an example where that makes sense? It's 32 blocks of size 32. Yeah. All right, so does anyone have an answer to this dramatic question, which you didn't think you were going to get tonight, such a dramatic question? When you were calling people tonight saying, what's going to happen in class, people were asking you. You're saying, probably nothing dramatic. And then this question came along. So what is the answer to this drama? Why is it that we want to do it this way? Yeah. Great. So what's an example? That's right, but I think you have to say it like one level higher up. So what's an example of like an access pattern. Sometimes we talk about memory access patterns, like a program generates addresses. That those addresses are like how it's accessing memory. It's in some kind of pattern. So what kind of pattern would be problematic if we use those upper bits and say not those lower bits, which I think is just a repackaging of what you just said. A sequential pattern, right? Let's say I'm just looking through, let's say I did something like this. Sequential, exactly. So let's say I did something like this, for I equals zero, I less than some, you know, size, I plus plus, and then I was doing something like an array sub I equals zero. So simple array initialization, very innocuous piece of code, right? How does that look in memory? It looks in memory like, well, there's, you know, depending what this is, it could be a character. Let's say it's a character, whatever size. Could be an integer, then it'd be 4 bytes at a time, whatever. But it's laid out contiguously in memory, yes? And it starts at some address. And let's pretend, it's laid out 30, in cache units, it's laid out kind of 32 bytes at a time. So if we start, let's pretend we're just starting at address 0. So that would be address in our, where's that coming from? I think there's a squirrel in the roof. The other day, my wife was at work, and she was sitting there, and then she was like, she's like, I'm going crazy. There's something in my hair. I don't know. I don't have long hair, but she tells me, like, sometimes when you have long hair, you think there's something in your hair. And she's like, and then she looked over, and there was this huge bug on her shoulder, and it had fallen from the roof. So there might be one there, is what I'm saying. Long story short, watch out. It was kind of horrible. So the first address, let's pretend again we have our 1,024-byte memory. So that means we have 1,024-byte memory. We have 10 bits, right? We just have to remember that. So our first address looks like this, all zeros. And then, of course, our next address looks like this. If we're just going byte by byte, because characters are a byte, then our next address looks like this. And, of course, we don't really care about these lower bits, because when we've accessed this first, you know, address zero, that's going to bring in the cache, it's going to pick some bits, remember, but it's going to put this whole block of 32 bytes in the cache. So if we think about this access pattern, what's after accessing 32 bytes of our array, how many times will we have hit in the cache? Well, the first one's a miss, and then, of course, the next 31 are hits, right? So when we access a sub 0, it's a miss, but then a sub 1, that's a hit because all these next bytes are in the cache already. But when we finally get to, say, address 32, what does address 32 look like? Well, address 31 was all ones down here, so same cache line referring to this last thing in the cache, but all the first bits were 0. The next address we get to, so this is, again, let me put the decimal version here, let me put the binary here, and yes, this is why in hardware level you always end up thinking about addresses and binary, and you have to be very comfortable with both. This is from 0 to 31. These are just addresses. When you flip to 32, in other words, you're essentially moving into the next logical kind of block of your memory, your address looks like this. 1, and then 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. So in other words, sorry, question? Yeah, orders of 2. Yeah, sure, right. Every 32, it flips one of these. Yep. And then what we have here then, if you, for example, let's say I had used the top 2 bits to determine which entry in the cache that these blocks go in. Well, remember, I have 4 entries in my cache. This is the 00, this is the 01, this is the 10, this is the 11. If I use the top 2 bits, when I get to address 32, the top 2 bits are still 0. So what's going to happen? Is that really not somebody doing that in here? Okay, you're making me go crazy. People are just making random noises all over the place. It's coming from up there. Where's that coming from? It's just upstairs. So someone's like cleaning up there, and I'm making a big deal of it. Okay, I should get over it. I should just be appreciative. Somebody's actually cleaning. That's nice. Anyway, so what we have here is, if we just use those top bits, it means that when we get to that next thing in our sequential access, we're going to then kick out this block and bring the next chunk of 32 into that same thing. So in our sequential access pattern, accessing like an array sequentially in order, we're going to have this very weird thing where every time we get to a new block, we're kicking out the last block. And if we use that array over and over again, which is pretty common, right? You initialize an array, then you might do some stuff to the array, then you might print out the array, whatever. What you're doing is you're making it so it's very hard for a contiguous array to be all in your cache. If you use the lower bits of the top part of the address as your cache index, you can see what's happened. The cache, those bits have flipped. As was said over here, they're more volatile. They're switching more quickly as you go through this array sequentially. What it would do is it would bring this next block and put it into the second entry in your cache. And therefore, you can kind of have your array fill up your cache, and your contiguous block of memory naturally fits into a bunch of your caches instead of getting mapped to the same address. So it seems like a little weird detail of which bits do you use to determine which slot of the cache you go into, but in a direct map cache, it's of course quite important. So let's let that sit in our heads for a second. Questions about that? Does that kind of make sense? Yeah. Okay. Well, all this is, so all this is just telling us this is a byte address. Now, the instruction itself tells us how many bytes we want, right? So this would be like, for example, a move byte of like, you know, zero into, whatever that address is, right? In this case, it was address zero. So the instruction tells us, do we want 1 byte or 2 bytes or 4 bytes? But you know, this is a byte address, so it's referring specifically just to this 1 byte. And when I write it in binary form, what I'm saying is we can kind of think of it as, well, these are the, you know, these bits tell us which byte we have inside the block, and then these bits are just telling us essentially which block we're referring to. So this is the zero. You can see on the first 32 addresses, the block address essentially is, you know, which block is it? Is it block zero? And that means all the first bits are zero. But I'm not sure I'm answering your question. Right, so what we're... Great. So your question here, so the index is telling us which slot. So let's say I'm saying we're using these lower bits like I suggested is better. So that tells us which slot, and the hardware just knows that. And then the tag is the remaining part. So the tag is, in this case, either like 000 or the next one might be 00... the remaining bits there. Sorry, 000 also. But it's okay. Like, the tag plus this index tells us the block number, if that makes sense. I didn't explain that really well, so. Yeah. That's right. Yes, right. So when you access any byte within that first 32 bytes of memory, you're going to bring in that whole block and then extract from that block, say, the byte or a few bytes that you're interested in. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so it's storing all.
It is storing that whole block, yes. Always we're dealing in that whole block. We're always moving that whole block into memory. Then we always, later we'll talk about write. We've been really talking about reads. We'll talk about writes in a second. Does that make sense? Questions about that? Okay. So that's a direct mapped cache. Now, there's an obvious problem with a direct map cache. Let's look at a code sequence that might have problems. And that problem are what we call conflicts. Basically, misses that are caused by the limited mapping to specific slots. Like in our first cache, in our first fully associative cache, when we had misses, it was basically because our cache was just too small. It was a, what we would call a capacity miss, that we were just out of capacity, so we have to kick something out and bring something new in. In a direct map cache, we might have two pieces of data. There might be plenty of room in the cache, but the two pieces of data we're interested in end up mapping to the same exact slot of the cache, and as a result, they're kind of kicking each other out, even though it seems like there's room in the cache. And that's fundamentally a problem with a direct map cache. So let's look at a piece of code that may have such a problem. We're just going to look at simple array-based codes. So that's one way to do this. And let's say we're doing something like this. Sum equals A sub I plus B sub I. Okay, so let's say we have code like that where we're accessing two arrays. And then let's say the arrays are laid out in memory. Here's where A is. Somewhere later, B is here. And let's pick some addresses for those. Let's say this is at 1024. This is at 2048 or something like that. So we have to have a big enough memory that can have at least that many bytes. So we have some bigger addresses now. And let's say we still have the same 32-byte block size, cache block. So the same as before. So let's look at those addresses. So let's say we have, these are our 5 bits of our index. Sorry, not index, offset. These are 5 bits. And then if we're talking about an address like 1024, that means we, of course, need at least 11 bits. 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512, 1024. If we have an address like 2048, that means we have an address like 10000000000000. And of course, we might have some other, I guess that's probably enough. So when we look at one of these addresses, we know that we have our behavior like this, where the lower so many bits of the address space, or sorry, of the address itself are just the which byte within the block, so we don't care too much about those. But then the next so many bits are determining our cache index. So let's say we have an 8-entry cache. So for an 8-entry cache, we need 3 bits of cache index. Tell us which slot that we're mapping into in this direct map cache. So you know, log base 2 of 8 is 3. So we're going to use these same 3 lower bits. And hopefully now, I guess a question to then figure out is when we're doing this code right here, let's say these are integers, int A of some size, int B of some size. Why don't you spend a minute and think about what's going to happen when you run this code in terms of the cache? Okay, so spend 1 minute or 2 minutes. Just figure it out. Like, how many hits and misses are you going to have?